beginning of Channel 2 Over. And beginning of the visit with Alan Morris this Sunday morning, the 23rd of April, 72. We're going to report on his Saturday working with Berman, putting in that fence. Channel 2 Over, beginning of the visit with Alan this Sunday morning, the 23rd of April, 72. Report on his day with Berman, putting in that fence. Channel 2 Over, beginning of the visit with Alan this Sunday morning, 23rd of April, 72.
Rain pretty soon, so that grass come up. Those cows are going to get pretty hungry.
You need light? Got a little. You want a little more?
I don't mind.
Yeah.
That help? Oh, you don't need to read it. You always talk through this. You can look any way you want to, but talk through this. I've never yet got Faye to do that. She sits back to see where she can't move. And when I talk to you, see, I ought to talk to you here, where if I talk to you back here, you see, it won't come through. And with people who don't care, I always put on the tape, and if it's not worth keeping, you see, I don't keep it. See, she gets comfortable. She gets cross-legged and everything. And when you're out there and you want something, holler, you see. We're not sensitive. I don't mind being woke up. I mean,
yeah.
I'm pretty tough. I'm about as tough as you are, probably.
It's hard to learn that, isn't it? Because your parents, you've always had to be so polite.
Well, he's polite.
Yeah,
you see,
civilized.
When you start doing things, being polite just stands in the way.
Yeah. And
after you get through, I'll report on my round yesterday.
You want me to read it?
I wouldn't read it. You've got it in your mind.
Well, I can just kind of look at it. Well, when I first got there, I got there a little bit late, and they'd just begun to start working on the new stretch of fence. And we just put in a little bit last time. So they'd torn it all out, all the old fence down, except for a little piece by his driveway.
Oh, that whole shebang, clear down the highway.
He said the hardest thing to get out was those wild persimmon trees. Yeah, he said they have deep roots. He had to saw some of them off and then dig the stumps out. He said his tractor just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And so I got there and they had torn all that out and pushed into a big pile and it was burning already.
You got there at 8 o'clock.
But it was burning already. So he told me that he was going to dig out two of those big railroad ties. He had two of them buried right by where his driveway starts. There was a little section of old fence in there that was still left. He said he was going to dig those out and use those for his corner posts in this new piece of fence. He said he needed strong corner posts so that he could pull the fence tight between them without being afraid that it'll pull the post out of the ground too.
And those corner posts are the costly ones.
Well, and these were those old railroad ties that he was telling me about last time. They're big, and I thought that I was going to see him grab one of these and pull it out of the ground, and I just wasn't going to believe that. So I saw him. He started digging around it with those post hole diggers, but then he said it was too big for all of us to pull out. So he backed the tractor up there, and I wrapped that big log chain around it. He pulled the thing right out of the ground with the tractor. I mean, it was just violent.
Did he pull it or lift it?
No, he pulled it.
Oh.
So that the back of it bent like this and just threw the dirt up in the air and everything. And then he just put the tractor, got it going as fast as it could go, dragged that big railroad tie down to the other end where he wanted it. If that thing had caught on something, that chain would have just popped, you know? I was just watching him going, big cloud of dust coming up behind him from dragging that thing. He drug it down the whole way to the other corner, unchained it, came back. Did the same thing with the other railroad tie, just popped it right out of the ground the same, dragged it down there. So then he came back, And he said he'd been waiting ever since he bought this place to tear out this one piece of old fence. He just didn't like it at all. It was that one piece. And now that he'd taken those railroad ties out, he could get it. So he turned his tractor around and lowered that blade and just got it going and hit that stuff really hard. And you could hear the old fence posts cracking and see the barbed wire flying up in the air. And then all of a sudden, see this jet of water and air come spraying out of his left rear tire. Just come spraying out of there. And I could hear him cussing over the roar of the engine. And as he looked down there and saw it, he drove it back out. He kept pushing it. He kept pushing the stuff, pushed it the whole way down into the fire. And then he drove it back, and we were looking at it, and he got off, and there was a cut in it about that long, and all the air and the water. They fill tractor tires up with water. I didn't know that. I didn't get a chance to ask him why.
Wait.
And, so he was...
It is heavy.
I bet it is. So he said that that tractor was more trouble than it was worth most of the time. He said it was always broken. So he told Johnny and I to follow him back up to the house in the truck.
See that, baby?
What kind of bird is that? Brown spots on it?
Yeah, it looks like
it. So he told Johnny and I to follow him back up to the house in the truck. So when we were about halfway there, that tire was about 3/4 of the way flat. And that tractor was going like this, but he didn't slow down any or anything. He was just going, I thought the thing was going to overturn for sure. But he just kept going. There's that one stretch right before you get to his house, and that's bumpy. You know, he was just flying over that, and I thought that thing was going to go over, but it didn't. And when he got up to the house, it was completely flat. I mean, the rim was just down on the ground. He just got off of it, looked at it, and just looked in the house. We sat down. He told me that when that tractor was only 10 days old, he was doing some work up the roadways, and he left it parked up there overnight. When he came back the next day, had a flat tire, somebody slit it open with a knife. He said that was the first trouble he'd had with it, and he'd had trouble ever since. He said one time he was trying to push a tree over, and he broke that whole housing on the back that lifts that blade up. Said if you hit something that lifts the blade up farther than it's supposed to go, it'll just crack that right away. We told Johnny to be careful when he was driving it that he didn't do that. And then there was that flat tire. And we just sat in there in the kitchen getting a drink of water, and every once in a while he'd just look out at the window at it and shake his head. And he said he was gonna fill it back up with water and then go down there and round the fire up with it and drive it back up here before the tire went down. So he did that. And then we drove back down there in the truck, put up some more fence, pulled it. We had to pull it tight with the truck because we couldn't use a tractor. And we only put up about halfway to the corner when he said that he didn't want to do any more work that day. I guess the tractor having broke kind of disheartened him or something. So we came back to the house, and it was lunchtime by then. No, we didn't either. We drove down to the creek to get ourselves a drink. There's a nice little store down there.
Yeah.
This lady runs it, and so we went in there and talked to her for a little bit while we were drinking a Coke. And then Mr. Dodd and I started talking, and he told me about... Well, we saw old George Fairbanks. Do you know him?
I've never seen him.
Really? Oh, he's strange looking. He's got a beard, and he's kind of tall and thin. He really looks strange. And we saw him coming out as we came in, and he told me about him, the way that his parents had owned a lot of this county. And they had died when he was a boy, and the lawyer had cheated him out of everything. Didn't leave him a cent. And the lawyer was a friend of his dad's, and his dad didn't think he'd do anything like that. And now old George lives back there in a shack, doesn't even have a wood floor in it, just the ground, you know, lives on welfare. And so as we were driving back, we saw him. He was just sitting under an old oak tree eating something. He didn't look too bad off. So
too unhappy?
No, he didn't look too unhappy to me. So we came on back.
He lives with one of the Townsends.
Really?
I forget which one. Snow Slater, Mary Townsend.
So we came back, and then had another one of those big meals that they have over there. I think that's why they're all so husky. They cook so much food, kids can't eat it all. We had roast beef and corn and squash and, let's see, what else do we have? Potatoes, homemade biscuits.
Hot bread.
Then she brought out a big cake for dessert, and we ate some of that. I just couldn't eat anymore. We were full. And so during the whole meal, Mr. Dowdy just kept looking out the window at that tractor and shaking his head. And finally, he said that the thing had given him a headache, and he was going to go lay down. So he went and laid down, and that's when those kids started causing some trouble. Because they you know, they're so full of energy, they can't sit still. So after dinner, I decided I was going to sit down and rest, too. So I sat down on the couch, and I was, you know, looking out the window there, and all of a sudden, they started running around on those wood floors, you know? It sounds like thunder, like a herd of cattle running through the house.
Buffalo.
And it's on those wood floors, it just echoes, and it just goes through the whole house, you know? And so, all of a sudden, I heard Mr. Dodd yell from in the bedroom, and it got quiet pretty quick. And then I was sitting there looking out the window, and I saw that all they'd done was just gone out the back door and ran out in the front yard, and they were running around yelling, knocking each other down and everything. They just brought it outside, you know. And I don't know. They're full of the same kind of energy Mr. Dodd is, I guess, and they just don't have the work to take it out. So they got to take it out some other way. And even the dogs were in on it. Dogs were jumping up in the air, hitting people and knocking them down. You know that big collie they got?
Yeah.
It's bigger than some of those kids.
Oh, yeah.
And so those dogs were jumping up in the air and knocking kids down. It was just a mess out there.
I've never seen them do that, but now Miss Mary says they do that. That's the truth. That's
right. Oh, it's just wild. And there aren't like sometimes... Sometimes, you know, you'll see kids like they divide up into two groups, but this is just every man for himself. I mean, like, two of them will gang up on another one and knock them down, and then the one that got knocked down, the other guy will gang up on the other one and knock him down. It's just fantastic. It's the roughest play I've ever seen.
I'd like to see that.
I can't remember doing anything like that when I was a kid. And they're just throwing anything they can get their hands on at one another. They're just mean.
I will tell you, I haven't seen them do it, but they play like that in the swimming pool. At one time, they're diving off, you see. And one time, they dived off and two of them hit in midair. Andre, it knocked them clear out.
Well, that's another thing he told me. I forgot about that. When he was talking about that tractor causing so much trouble, he told me how he cracked that swimming pool. He said that he was pushing dirt up against the side of it with the blade of that tractor, and that he was backing up there, and his foot slipped off the brake, and it jumped up, the wheels jumped up on the sidewalk that goes around it, and that weight put a crack right down the side of it, and it cracked the sidewalk on the whole way on the other side of the pool. Something, the shifting of the concrete, something cracked the concrete on the other side of the pool. And he said if he hadn't caught the brake again, that whole tractor would have gone into the pool. But he stopped it in time. I mean, that's just the reckless way he drives that tractor. Whenever he climbs on that thing, I just get excited because I know something's going to happen. Because he just drives it so fast and so hard. It's the same thing like when he was pulling those posts out of the ground, you know. It was just brute force. It was exciting. It's the same. It just carries right over when he climbs on that tractor. It's the same thing.
I love to see him in the old carnival. Don't you know, in the old days, the carnival had feats of strength.
Mm-hmm.
You had that thing that you hit with a sledgehammer and you ring a bell up there. I bet you he could ring that bell.
I bet he could, too.
Oh.
And Daddy was the same way.
Was he?
Yeah. Oh, he's a man.
So, Mr. Dodd, he finally came out. He told us to take those kids away, take them fishing. So we went out there, and first thing we mentioned, fishing, all the fighting stopped and everything. It was all organization. Mr. Dodd said that fishing's the only thing those kids like more than eating. And so they got all the poles and everything. We put them in the car and drove down to where the fisherman lives. And he fishes for a living. So I got out with them. We walked up there and asked him how the fishing was. He said it was good. He showed us some of the catfish that he caught. And then they asked him for some bait. I guess they have a little arrangement with him or something, because he gives them all the free bait they want. He gave them some of those little shrimp, you know. So we got in, drove across the field to that little pond they have over there. They started fishing. They caught a few little fish. But before too long, they started getting bored with it. That's when the fighting started again. As soon as they got bored with it. And, I mean, all of a sudden I was looking over and I just see two of them sneak up behind one and push him right in the lake. He just went straight in. And so he started picking up mud and slinging it at him and splashing water at him. And before long, they were all throwing mud. There must have been half a dozen of them, but it looked like about 20. And they were throwing mud and pushing each other. And all of a sudden, I don't know where it came from, but that big collie was back again. And he just came running up and jumped in the air and landed in that pond and splashed all of us. And he was swimming around out there, and those kids were jumping in the water and pushing each other in. It was really something.
I've never seen this. This is something. They always so polite when we are over there.
And quiet.
And quiet, just models.
Oh. Like bunnies.
Uh-huh.
Go in and watch the TV. Well, now your point of view has changed just a little bit since last week.
I don't know, I don't know what to call it. The work kind of got to Mr. Dodd this time when his tractor broke it. It just kind of put him down a little bit, you know. I'd never seen him that way. And he wasn't really upset about it or anything. He was just kind of disappointed.
Well, he does. He gets upset. let me tell you, Alan, he's so gifted that he feels intensely. He doesn't realize it. He doesn't know those things. You see, I study them. You study them. And you see it. You see the literature. But he hadn't done that. I don't know what's going on.
And, you know, just like some of those stories, I could, now that I think back upon it, I could see it building. It was building to a point where that tractor was going to break. I mean, he was pushing it to where it couldn't take anymore. And it was just building up. I should have been ready for it, but I wasn't.
Let me tell you, old Cecil Pardee, some of them are like that. He had that old John Deere over here when they put melon back here. And he plowed it and harrowed it and pulled up old stumps that I couldn't get up, you see, with a plow. And then they brought fertilizer, and it held 6 tons, that little trailer, 5 tons, and he wouldn't put just 2 or 3 tons. He would fill it clear to the top. And he eventually busted his tractor. But he gets it out of it. Some of them do that. If they got machinery, they get something out of it. And it's their own. It's not misusing somebody else's. You know?
He pushed it. He just go right into that old fence. He'd start out with it with the blade kind of high, you know. As soon as he'd get right to that fence, he'd lower it so that it cleared out all that brush and everything that was growing down there too, those sweet potato vines. Then he'd just push it all in that big pile and throw that diesel fuel on it and light it. Let it burn. I mean, it was so hot out there that day because we were downwind from the fire. It was blowing that hot air down on us.
Oh, it was a pretty big fire.
Oh, it was big. There was a little pile of trash that was burning, and then there was a big one. And he said that little one was as big as the other one, but it is burnt down for a couple of days. And but that big one, it was as high as a trailer.
And he stacked it up there with a tractor.
Oh yeah, well.
With that bucket.
Yeah, when he was, well, I'll tell you just part of what he put in it. Most of it was rounded up when I got there. And it was trees that he'd knocked over and old fence posts. And there was a lot of barbed wire in it, but he just balls that up after all the woods burn and drags it and puts it in that sinkhole back behind his house. I went back there and saw that too. And he decided that there were these two big water oaks that had died, they were rotten. And so he decided to cut those down. So he took his chainsaw, his power saw, cut both of those down. They were so rotten when they hit, each of them broke into three pieces when they hit. So he just got us, and we piled all three pieces up. He wrapped the chain all around, all three pieces, and dragged it down there to where the fire was burning, unchained it, and took the blade, and pushed it up in there into the fire. It was just like last time. He'd drive that thing right into the fire. But there were three good-sized logs. Well, six good-sized logs that he just threw on right then. The pile was already big. And he didn't have the bucket this time. He had it was a fuel can, you know. And he was like just throwing fuel on it like that. Even after it was lit, he'd throw some on it to make it flame up. I was kind of scared the flame might come back through and into the thing. I'd heard about that happening before, but he didn't seem concerned about it.
It was last time when he took off his hat, she was surprised, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, that's in here too.
Yeah.
Yeah. After I'd gotten there right when he was leaving to work last time, and I went down there and I'd seen all those little children running around and everything, and I saw him grab those fence posts and pull them out like that. Saw him driving those tractors around, and how full of energy and everything he was. And then we came back to eat lunch. I saw him take off that hat, and he was almost bald. He looked about 20 years older than I thought he'd look, you know. And it really surprised me. And later on, I found out that that's his second family. That man just has more energy than I've ever seen. I just couldn't believe it.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
He looks so much different with his hat off.
And he can roughhouse with those children,
oh,
like they do.
Monkey?
Mm-hmm. I told him that he started talking about the monkey, and I said, yeah, Dr. Miles told me about the monkey, and from what he said, I didn't think I'd better mention it when I came over, and he started laughing. He thought that was just great. Mrs. Dodd laughed at that too. He said that
you don't need a title.
Well, he said that he hoped that monkey would climb up in the tree and a hawk would come down, swoop down, and just carry it away. She said that she'd cry if that happened. He said, yeah, but he'd be rooting for that hawk. And she came down last time when we were taking up the old fence, and she found this piece of old hog wire that it wasn't in too bad shape. And she said that she was going to keep it in case we needed some more. So we took it off and gave it to her, and she, you know, it's got holes in it about this big. And she kind of pulled it into a circle, and she said, yeah, I'm going to make a monkey cage out of this. And he said, if you get a monkey that's big enough that it can't get out of those holes, he was moving away.
they feed the monkey?
They feed it almost as much as one of the kids gets. I was watching him. You know, his daughter came in. She's the one that feeds it, usually. She came in, took a plate, put some mashed potatoes on it, corn on it, took about three bones from a pork chop bones, you know, put those on it, and then even took a roll, half of a roll, and put that on there. Went out there, it was a full plate, went out there and set the plate down the bottom of it, and that monkey, he'd just come down and take a handful, just real quick like that, stick it in his mouth, and he wouldn't come down to the floor to eat it. He'd hang from his tail and one hand and just lean down and scoop a handful of food out and go up back up to the top and eat it, and then he'd go back down. And he never would come down and touch the floor, though. They fed him quite a bit, though.
Was that at meal time?
Yeah, that was right after we'd gotten through.
Yeah.
That. She took the scraps off the plates.
Well, how does she keep the dogs and all from eating it?
I don't know how she kept the dogs from eating it when she walked out there, but she put it right into the cage and then locked
the
cage.
Oh, in the cage?
Up. Yeah, and then locked the cage up.
Oh, I see.
The cage was sitting up on a wheelbarrow, so they could move it around real easy.
Well, now he don't stay in the cage much when I'm over there.
Really? He was in the cage the whole time I was there, except this last one yesterday when I went over there, they had him back in that little house back there that they have for the animals.
Oh.
He was back in there, so I didn't get to see him yesterday. But the week before, he stayed in the cage most of the time.
You need to be out on somebody's shoulder when I'm over there.
Oh, yeah. Causing trouble. Johnny, pretty good worker?
Yeah, I'd say between me and Johnny, we can almost get it as much done between us as Mr. Dodd can do alone.
Between you?
Yeah. It takes two of us to pull one of those fence posts out.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's doing. I guess he's worked on quite a bit of fence.
Johnny?
Well, that's news.
That is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Yeah, Mr. Dodd doesn't have to tell him what to do.
See that handsome fella? No, he knows he's handsome.
Why he speaks so big.
And he stays at it.
Oh, yeah, till we were through.
But yesterday, Mr. Dodd gave out. Well, you know, I called over there Friday. I was in town. And Shelley was... They'd just been out working, the children were out of school for some reason or other. And they just got in and she was lying down. It's sort of late, catching her breath. And she said Mr. Dodd was right depressed that things were happening up at the campus, the university they call it, that it looked like a movement that was on foot, that was going to fire around 4,000 of those fellas that did the work up there.
Yeah, he told me about that yesterday.
Oh, did he?
He says that, he told me about two things that they're going to do. One of them is that right now there's a head of maintenance that's his boss and is the boss of all the maintenance men for every area. Well, they're doing away with that, and they're putting there's going to be four big area directors. He says they're splitting it into east and west, And then they're splitting each one of those into two. There's going to be four main area directors, and the maintenance is going to be under their supervision. And he said that they have area directors now, and the area directors have too much to do already. And he said that they shouldn't have put that burden on them, too. But I think the thing that he was talking about getting those people fired is they're talking about letting the young people that live in the dormitories do most of the maintenance work themselves. And that way, the cost of living in the dormitories would be lower. And so that they'd have to fire quite a few of the maintenance workers if the students decided to do the maintenance work themselves. They sent out, I told them this yesterday, they sent out a questionnaire. I got one that asked if you would rather do the maintenance work yourself. You know, this is everything from putting in new light bulbs to mopping the floor and everything, you know. And I think it would cut down the cost of living in the dorms about $80 a quarter. And Mr. Dodd said that he'd still have his job, but that a lot of the other ones would get fired, and he didn't know if he'd like it, because he'd be teaching these students how to do all this maintenance work, and about the time they learned how to do it, they'd graduate, and he'd have to teach another bunch how to do it. And he said that it just didn't, teaching the same thing over and over again, he didn't think he'd like to do that, you know. He said that they'd have to keep one main maintenance man to know where everything was, and they'd have to have a good plumber in case the water system broke down. And he said that he just didn't think that the students could do it all. And I agreed with him. When they sent me that thing, I filled it out and put down that I didn't think that I'd like to be in on it, because I don't have much time anyway. They keep me jumping pretty good. So he said that was right. That, I mean, those students were there to study, and that there's no way that around exam time they weren't going to neglect the maintenance duties that they had, because they were there to pass those tests, and they were going to have to study for them. If they didn't pass them, they weren't going to study them. So he said that it was just natural that they'd neglect the maintenance duties and study for those tests. And then I said that seemed like they just like to shake things up over there at the university every once in a while. And he said that was the truth. About every 2 or 3 years, they'd shift things around and try something that they had tried before and it didn't work. He said they'd try it again. He said they just like to stir things up every once in a while for no reason.
Well, you know, he didn't ask for his supervisor's job, and I little surprised he took it. It must have been a right good bit above what he had been making. But the thing of it is, he's not short of money. He makes a whole lot out there. And what he needs is a little time. And Shirley says when he goes home, she says now he goes over there earlier and comes back later. And then he is sort of grumpy when he gets back. And that's the price you pay, you know, for those jobs where you take responsibility.
Well, he said that I think before he had about, I don't know how many people were under his control, but he had all the janitors and maids and everything under his control, but this year they weren't. That somebody else was telling them what to do, and it took a little bit of the load off him, but the next year it was going back the way it was. He was going to have all those people under him. He has to order them around and everything.
Yeah. Well, that's not the easiest thing in the world. Now, what I do, I'd get into it. You know, you may need to play mine a little while. I'd get into it and rework it. And make your statements a little bit clearer, and get your cases a little bit, more out of control. I don't know. I can't tell how the people work, you see. I can pretty well do it. Now, it comes in my mind, it comes clear. Now, I'll tell you what I did yesterday. Leonard takes these beautiful photographs. And he's been in and out of here, and some people put us off. And yesterday I thought, well, I'd better, I had so many other things I really needed to do. I thought I'd better take off a little bit and go the rounds with him so he could see. He just knew two or three people. Mostly he knew Cookie. So I went over to his silo. Now Everett is one of the great talkers. He talks so fast you can't keep up with him, except I've got onto him now and I can follow it. And one of the nicest things about Everett, see, he always has that fresh manner. And he talks to you, see, just like you're his first cousin. And he thinks a lot of his kinfolks. Now, he lives over there in that old family house. He never married. He's my age. He just ran in there. And there's his brother Ernest. He lives up the other end of the woods. Well, the most peculiar thing happened. Ernest didn't want to stay and talk. I tried to talk to him, and he went on back up there. He said he had some things on the stove. So we got together. He had his photo, his camera, and he'd go inside and take pictures, and I'd stay outside and draw, you see. And then he'd come outside and take pictures, and I'd go inside and set down a few notes. See, we had a fine time over there. And I've got that in there. First time I got the house plan. And you see, Everett, he don't care a bit of this house. He got that round oak dining table. When I first saw it, it was had a lot of magazines on it, a book or two. The last time I saw it, it had had a lot of clothes on it. Yesterday it had two big gray felt hats. I picked up one of them to see if I could wear it. I could almost wear it. Oh, it's a house. And you see, a whole lot of it is just like his daddy and his mama left it. The same things are hanging on the nails out there on the porch. I picked up one old garment. I wanted to see what was. I didn't know whether they had those clothes hooks or just plain old nails. Well, most of them are hooks, but the one I picked up off of was two nails they had driven in there, and it was an old plaid jacket. It'd been that long, it's stiff. I had to take both hands to lift it. We had it all to ourselves after a half an hour. That's enough for one time. Well, now, you see, that now the thing of it is, you see, you say that's nothing special. Well, it's visible. It's visible. And something happened. You see, we saw his quarter. Well, now, just around the corner, Maxie Mixon, he's an old farmer. But he had this trouble with his glands and all, and he lost all the bottom of his face. And he's self-conscious about it. Don't bother me. He talks all right. And we pulled up there, and there that old booger was out there in the barnyard. And in a place like that, see, you always go up making noise so you don't slip up on people. Mm-hmm. And chattering. You go up chattering. And I said, you couldn't be doing much work. Your shirt's too clean. So he looked at it, you know, and I saw it a little bit. It's still clean by my standards. I said, Maxie, I never saw a barnyard with grass in it that looked like the front lawn. Well, he pointed down, you see, to a cow pie. Is the reason for all that. It's not, however, it's not the reason. Cow pies don't make grass grow. There we were, but it's visible, you see. Here come that animal out there. I don't know what it was to start with. And Leonard saw it, and he says, look at there, that otter. Well, if it'd been me, I'd have looked the other way, I'd say, because I know the farmers, these old people, I know their reaction to wildlife, you see. They're going to shoot it or put the dog on it or something. Mm-hmm. They're not going to protect it. And he got restless, you know, and he started up toward the house, and I knew he got an arsenal up there. But that little bit too far, so he said sort of to himself, he says, I wonder if that old toothless dog would run him. About that time I got up there to him, I said, now I gotta go. And he stopped. So we sort of watched the otter going on back and walked over to the fence. And he says, you know, that is the first riding mower I ever had that was any count. Well, that was my first lead, you see. Right along there, he on the outside, he cut into some of that heavy hair grass. We went into the shed. He got one of those fine old sheds, I see. The roof's high enough, the rafters high enough, you won't hit your head the way you do out of your mind. And he demonstrated that little riding mower, 7 horse. He got a starter on it if he wants to, or else he can pull it. Leonard sat down on it and shifted it. And right back of him was his big tractor, broke down. And he has the access to the countryside. People who work for him, you see, won't work for me. This fella, Ellis somebody, I don't know him, has been over there and done a good bit of work on the rear end. But still wouldn't run. He said he had gone to Cali and Gainesville and trying to get a new one. I said, how much did they want for a new one like it? $34.95, he said. Well, we looked around there for a while, and he showed me the bearings that it froze up and one thing and another, and I said, I'll bet you they didn't give you full 95 for this. He says, it's just about that. So we left. You see, it's visible both places. And something happened. And that's what you can't do in the suburbs. It's not visible, nothing happens. It's all abstract. Well, the same thing all along. We stopped over there at his sister's, both of them there. One of them stoned there, the other one dead, almost dead as he is. There's two cars there, one truck. The truck was pulled up at the gate where he couldn't hardly get in the gate. A man was standing on the porch. I'd stopped there once before by myself. I just made my way in, you see, and found out what I wanted to find out and see, saw what I wanted to see by myself. With Leonard, it's a little easier. With somebody else, it's a little easier. Well, sir, of all people, the fella standing up there, his name was Smoke. I said, you don't mean to tell me you're the man who lives over there at Flemington? He says, right there in the heart. And they'd all represented him as cranky and mean and hard to get along with. Well, I get the air. But with us, sort of newcomers, I'm telling you, his eyes lit up. He's ready to talk. He said he could fix anything. He said he had two pieces of cypress over there, 17-inch cypress. He wasn't hard of hearing, unfortunately. I said, says, well, you better mind out where you store that cypress. A lot of people, yes, ma'am. I said to him, now you make all these things. Now here's one thing I bet you don't make. You know, I buy these axes now, and the handles are just like toothpicks. He says, they're not worth taking home. But I haven't got any hickory. I says, I've got some. What size you want? He says, 10-inch, 8-inches, too. Just so the grain's straight. I said, I'll bring you some. Don't you have any? He says, I had some, but I sold off that 40. Well, I says, they wouldn't miss a hickory tree or two over there, would they? He said, they might catch me. So you see, we had it. We had it. And the others came out, and we sat on the porch just like we was company or their kinfolks and talked a long time. Well, all the way along the line, you see, we did that. So, I don't know, you see, what I'm willing to go along with anybody or in any anywhere they want to go, except they can't make the way. You see, you can't, you see, that's one thing you saw when you went back home to talk to Bert. You can't get to him.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get access to him. Well, you can get access to all these people. Now, it's a little difficult to get them here, but I don't want to get them here. And you don't need to get them here. You see, you don't need to have Mr. Dodd in here. Well, now this business here, you see, now you what you want to do, I think, Alan, is work out your system, work out your message, and you can watch me and pick up a little bit. I've learned a little bit, you see. But your system, now you see, you fouled up on your typewriter. For one thing, I wouldn't have an old electric typewriter. I'd just get one I'd carry anywhere. Didn't have one, I'd get one. And Suzanne got one. She's old enough for grandmother, but of course she could get one. It's amazing how long it takes young people who are supposed to be scholarly to get a hold of the scholarly tools. And a typewriter is one of them, you see. And also using it, you see, and looking at things. Most of them never learn to do that, of course. I think what you're doing, I'd keep it all. I wouldn't just throw it away, but I'd tack it together, staple it together. Here's the way it looked at it at the first, but see, as you do this, you see, as you type this out, it gets clearer in your mind. And then you want to set it down the way it's clearer. Now that's what I did, but I didn't take the time like you did. It doesn't take me any time at all to sit down and see what happens. Mm-hmm. Now if I use it, you know, if for some particular reason, that's different. But you can knock it out, you see, and get a hold of it. Get a hold of it. And now, somewhere along the line, you see, you want to talk about it. That brings out a whole lot of it that you can't see yourself. I mean, it comes out as you talk. You can see it as you're talking. But like I said to you last night, I think that the worst thing you can do is talk about it before you get it down.
Mm-hmm. That disperses it.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. takes away the urge for it. But now, here's the thing. To me, it's a relief. It rests me to go to the typewriter. While I'm watching what goes on, you see, I don't have an opportunity just to look on. and take part the way you do. Everywhere I go, I have to make something happen. I have to make something happen, mm-hmm. or at least I do. So it's sort of restful to me to be at home and look at it on the tripod.
Yeah, you had no responsibility at all in making things happen over at the Dodge.
Yeah,
you just looked on and participated.
Well, as he goes along, you see, he can
make
things happen.
You can. But it's not just reporting it, it's using it. You're making, it's so tempting just to 1, 2, 3, 4, this is what happened now.
Yes, the reporting of it is leisurely. Yes, that's the nicest part of it. You ought to keep it leisurely. And now Mr. Dodd works in a fury, but he talks in a leisurely way, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But you see, you saw Mr. Steele night and day. You didn't hear Ms. Dodd report on anything? She doesn't get in much when he's there.
She was, most of the time I was there, she was out in the garden, putting fertilizer in the garden.
He hasn't paid attention much.
No, you haven't.
You can't see everybody.
Yeah, I think he's seeing, this is a better glimpse of Dodd than I ever saw. And if he could just put it together as a glimpse. And he has changed his point of view a little bit on God.
Yeah,
he may not know it, but he has.
You're conscious of it.
Well, now I've seen him where he isn't so unbeatable as he was last time.
Yeah. Yeah, he breaks up. But you see, I think your point of view last, your first point of view is the one.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, shift too much. I think that's the one that opens it up. You can put all this other stuff in, but you can do it as exception to the rule. You can choose your point of view.
And what to leave out, working it up that isn't important to what you're really looking at.
Well, I wouldn't face that. When you're working with me, you don't have to face that. Now, if you're going to use it in public or something like that, see, you'd have to do that. But I don't care about that. Just stick it in. Just stick it in anyway. I'm part of four followers. It don't matter to me. If it's interesting, something interesting, stick it in. Now you can think about some of your close-ups and some of your detailed actions. Now you say, think of Ms. Rawlings. You see, she's got that beautiful picture of the Carl Snake. So far, you don't have anything like that. You got no circumstantial treatment in detail. Even your handling of the stacking up the stuff, you see, you do it with sort of rough gestures. I mean, you see that yourself. I mean, and all those little skills, that you use, what you want to do is see it. And that mailbox out there, painted with those big letters on it, you can read his name. Well, undoubtedly, they are some of the nicest people I've ever seen. But now, you don't know any neighbors.
I just talked to the man who fishes for a living.
Which one did you talk to?
The
barefoot one?
I didn't notice if he was barefoot or not. He didn't have a shirt on.
Yeah.
He was real tan.
Yeah. Older fella?
Mm-hmm.
But now he's John Henry. Now he's one of the gifted ones.
I want to get back and talk to him again.
If you can. Whatever he's doing, just light in and do it with him. You see, you can do that.
Oh, yes.
Now, he is the one. He is the only one. The rest of them, his brother, George, is, he's lost his touch now. He's got disease ailments. But John Henry has got that old world manner. Oh, it's sad. Just as rich. George Fairbanks lost his, as you see. But John Henry's got his.
Oh, I would just love to be able to just be with around him for days, listen to him talk.
Yeah.
John Henry Bulk Knight.
That's right. He's got it.
He's doing just what for generations they've done.
Well, we're going to have a little sandwich after a while, I would say.
Yeah, we'll have
it. It's 12 o'clock.
I'll fix one now.
Time he takes a break and have a little sandwich, he might work a little bit on his stuff. I don't know what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And you ought to be able to, you've got to see it first. You got to see the direction that you want to go. And then you ought to be able to knock that whole stuff in, put in all the stuff and more too, you see, in 3/4 hour. I mean, you don't linger over those things. Not right.
Would you like to take a hot shower? More? Or no, or do you care? Would you like to run in the rain?
Yeah, I feel all right now.
Do you? Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. If it was raining, I'd get the horses up, but they don't care to ride in the rain. Do you like to ride?
I haven't ridden a horse in years.
That's almost the end of Channel 2 over, and the end of a little visit with Alan Marsh. He reports on his working with Berman yesterday, Saturday. And this is the end, almost the end of Channel 2 over, and the end of the visit with Alan this Sunday morning, the 23rd of April, 72. Channel 2 over, towards the end of Channel 2 over, and the end of the visit with Alan this Sunday morning, the 23rd of April, 72. Channel 2 over, towards the end of Channel 2 over, and the end of the visit with Alan Marsh, this Saturday, this Sunday morning, the 23rd of April, 72.